The Blackshaw Arts Hour.
Hello and welcome to the Blackshaw Arts Hour. We are very excitingly on episode 74.
Ooh.
Wow.
I know, right? This is also our first live recording for 2018. So, hello, 2018. Nice to meet you.
You're looking at me while you're saying that. I'm Matt, I'm not...
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. That was misleading for you. You might have had a little bit of a crisis of confidence in your identity there. You are Matt Boothman, I can confirm that. I'm Ellie Pitkin, and we've also got the lovely Vicky Weston.
Hello, everybody.
So there we go. It's a trifecta for this episode. And we've got lots of exciting things coming up. We've got the usual film review. We've also got some hilarity from the lads who do art. Strat and Alex are bringing us limericks later.
I can imagine that's going to... It's going to be slightly crazy.
Vicky just gave me this, like, shocked, concerned look.
Oh, man.
Which I can... Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, that's the correct reaction. And we're also going to be talking about 18 shows in 2018, which is an article we spotted in Time Out, which seems like a handy way for us to have a little look at what's happening in the theatre world this year. And we're also going to be talking about WAF, Wafferty WAF WAF. For those that don't know, WAF is the Wandsworth Arts Fringe. And it's happening again this year. We are taking part again this year. We're excited. We're excited?
Very excited. Yes. And everyone else should be too.
Excellent. So, let's kick things off the way we often do with a bit of this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
Matt of the Booth, what Hello. Are you doing a review on today?
Let's start the year on a sunny note with some Pitch Perfect 3.
Hooray! Oh man, I love Pitch Perfect so much.
I like this series as well.
It's yeah. just joy, isn't it?
It is.
I never get bored of watching... Well, I've not seen number 3, but I have seen 1 and 2, and I never get bored of watching Pitch Perfect, partly because of my deep love and affection for Anna Kendrick, because I love her so much.
She's wonderful, and I'm also a mega fan of Rebel Wilson. So it's just all wonderful. One and two were on over the seasonal period, and I have recorded them both, and we'll just watch them over and over again.
And you've seen the third one now as well, haven't
you? Yes, I have.
Oh, I'm jealous that I have not seen the third one.
So, like, I really like these movies as well, but while kind of acknowledging that they are quite kind of scrappy, patchy sort of movies.
Yes.
Like that, you know that when I talk about how a movie is put together, I like to sort of, I like very kind of clear arcs, and like I find it really satisfying when like storylines weave together really well, and that kind of thing. And
that does not
Pitch Perfect movies are much more of a kind of patchwork, almost like a sketch format.
Yes.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
I would say they have like specific things they want to try and shoehorn into the movie, and like a montage where everyone sings a lot of different songs that all mash together, for example, and do some weird exercises, and that happens in both films 1 and 2.
They feel like they're a little bit put. I mean, they are scripted. Kay Cannon is the screenwriter for all three, but they have that feel of a lot of American comedies that are quite heavily workshopped, or you know, put together through improv, or all the kind of SNL crew type, Saturday Night Live crew type movies. But they're what holds them together is a very charismatic core cast. Anna Kendrick we mentioned, Rebel Wilson we mentioned. They are the kind of standouts, and just a general kind of charm and a feeling that everybody in it kind of has a good heart and is trying to make something nice.
Yeah, it's definitely an ensemble film series.
Yeah. Yes. So in this one, our heroes, the Bellas, the a cappella group, are not really a group anymore. They've all graduated university and they're out in the real world, and have varying levels of employment or not. But through a series of circumstances, they all come back together for their one last tour. One of them has a connection, has a dad in the military, so they end up on the USO tour of Europe doing various different army bases with a series of other musical acts, all of whom play actual instruments rather than just doing music with their mouths.
Mm-hmm. Whereas previously they've been up against other a cappella groups.
Exclusively, yes.
So the feeling of being out of your safe university bubble and out in the real world is echoed by this feeling of we're out of the a cappella competition circuit and competing with people who we're not necessarily on a level playing field with anymore. Sort of taps into that feeling that I'm sure a lot of us young people have experienced of mm-hmm. feeling like maybe you've already peaked and that you're failing at life a little bit.
Too close to home.
Envying the people still at university and having that life that you remember enjoying. But that this one is a sort of the, like I say, the themes and the arcs are not necessarily as strong or as tight as they are in some other movies, but this one is a lot about not comparing yourself too much with other people in terms of judging your success, like playing to your own artistic strengths, just enjoying the art that you're making rather than comparing it to how what other people are doing and coming up short. And that feels... I don't know how aware either of you are of some of the stuff that's gone on behind the scenes on this production.
No, not at all.
I feel like that message of being like proud of what it is that you're doing and not taking too much outside influence is something that might have rubbed off on some of the cast and creatives.
Oh, really?
There's a lot of threads going through each of these movies. Like there's a toolkit of stuff that you want to see in a Pitch Perfect movie. Mm-hmm. There's your riff off, which Vicky mentioned, where everybody does a little collage of singing. There's what I would categorize loosely as antics.
Yeah.
And like getting into scrapes. Mm-hmm. Which
there's
is,
so much of
there
that.
Should be scrapes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, which can sometimes be a bit gross out and sometimes a bit slapstick and all that kind of stuff. And there is usually a thread of slightly unconvincing romance.
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, because in the first film, that's Anna Kendrick and...
what's his face? The character is called Jesse. I don't know the actor.
So he's got a weird name. I think that's like Skylar Astin or something like that.
I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
I know this because he's married to Anna Camp, who plays the girl who vomits everywhere in the film. And I love Pitch Perfect. And then the second one, it's Rebel Wilson, and I would just refer to him as Andy from Modern Family. Adam Levine, is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he is excellent. And that is totally unconvincing and kind of gross and brilliant at the same time.
Yeah,
and
it is Skylar Astin.
Yes! Oh, I'm so good at people's names.
This time around, it's Brittany Snow's turn to have an unconvincing romance with a very sort of generic army boy.
He's
so beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, I just want her to be gay so much because she really should be.
This is what I want to address because so do the cast and so do all the fans.
Okay.
People have picked up on the fact that Brittany Snow's character Chloe, Anna Kendrick's character Becca, are the two with the most romantic chemistry in all of the films.
Yeah.
Like they have practically their first major scene together is one walks in on the other in the shower and they have a slightly awkward conversation there, and it sort of builds from there, and they always have moments in the movies.
Yeah.
And
this one's no exception.
Yeah.
They have moments in
there.
They have moments. They also have moments that never actually made it into the film.
Oh.
Which the actor, so they pushed for a bit more of a romantic end game for those two characters. So somewhere on the cutting room floor is a kiss between those two characters, which we will never get to see unless somebody leaks it. Please, Anna Kendrick, leak the footage.
Do it,
or recreate it at home, whatever.
Yeah, whatever you need to do, Anna and Brittany, whatever you need to do.
And so there's another sort of generically handsome man that Anna Kendrick has a lot of scenes with that was brought in.
Generically handsome man played by Craig from Hollyoaks.
Oh, right.
Oh, no.
He's actually very good.
Oh, I don't
he's
care,
good.
Though.
who apparently she had to fight not to do it. Like, they kept pushing her to do a take where she kisses him.
Oh.
Which she fought against, knowing that if she did that one take, that would be the one take that they used.
Yeah.
So instead, I think to the movie's benefit, her character doesn't actually have a romantic plot line in this movie.
No, it never comes to anything.
It's about her sort of recognising her talent and that kind of stuff, rather than about getting the cute boy.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So yeah, so there is. It seems from kind of backstage stories and gossip that like the whole creative team, the cast, the director, all of this are all in favour of being a bit more progressive doing the romance that is clearly happening on the screen. Whereas it's the production company that are squeamish about it.
Come on, guys. Yeah. Get the programme.
Is the director Elizabeth Banks again, or is it someone
No,
else?
this one is directed by Trish Sia. Sia, S-I-E.
I don't know who that is.
Who is not a name I'm particularly aware of.
Interesting.
But yeah, so this is another instance of a very common Hollywood thing known as queerbaiting,
mm-hmm.
where the they will put just enough subtext or indication that there may be a same-sex or otherwise queer romance going on that they get that section of the audience on board, but will never actually follow through on it for fear of putting off the straights, basically.
Ugh, boo to you people.
Yeah.
Come on.
But we're seeing a nice trend of the actual cast or sort of members of the creative parts of the team rather than the business parts of the team pushing for more inclusion on that. So Oscar Isaac and John Boyega in Star Wars are another example of this. They've both said in interviews that they are playing those two characters' relationship as flirtation and as romantic. It's just not something that has come through canonically in the script so far.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I did not know that, but it totally clicks in my head now.
There's a nice little subversive like undermining that creatives are then like, well, you can't really control how I'm acting on screen.
Yeah,
like,
and as long as the directors
are on board,
then you're done. Yeah.
Like that's the control they can exert. They are the ones who are on the screen, so they can put whatever they want into their performance. They're the ones on the press circuit. Like the producers aren't doing interviews.
Yeah.
The cast are doing interviews, and the cast can say, and Brittany Snow particularly has been saying a lot, because she's had fans come up to her saying the Becca-Chloe relationship in Pitch Perfect is how I knew I was gay.
Yes,
And so she's really on board with playing that up because she's seen how it's helped.
That's so
young women,
Come on, producers.
Yeah. Oh, what are they going to get with the programme? Yeah.
So that's a big annoyance, but it's nice hearing the kind of the backstage stuff that at least the cast were playing it that way. You can still read
because I couldn't be mad at Anna Kendrick about this if it was really possible.
No. Yeah. And then in terms of everything else that happens, we get a really fun Rebel Wilson character, Fat Amy, Fat Patricia. I'm never sure which one to actually use because they're both...
She's officially credited as Fat Amy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where she gets tangled into a crime, an international organised crime
plot. Of course she does.
It's so good because Rebel Wilson gets to show off her real life nunchuck skills.
Yeah. And it means that we get... This isn't a spoiler because it's the cold open of the movie. Is that they get to jump away from an exploding yacht, after singing Britney Spears' "Toxic."
Yeah, amazing,
which is fantastic.
Just amazing. That's what I'm here for, right?
Yeah, they've really let loose on Rebel in this film.
Good.
She's literally kick ass.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah, just let her do her thing in all films.
Yeah,
yeah. In terms of the musical numbers, that version of Toxic I mentioned is memorable and has still been going around my head in the week since I watched the film. Partly because it crops up a couple of times because the chronology of the movie moves around a little bit. But also partly of sort of analysing why some of these numbers are more memorable than others. It's because it's something is actually going on, like it's playing a part in the story.
Mm.
I think one of the criticisms I'd have of this instalment is that a lot of the musical numbers are just sort of like they function as time padding. It's just like now they're in a new location, so a new musical number is happening, but it doesn't necessarily actually advance anything or play a part in anybody's characterization or plot or anything. It's just like, and now this musical number happens, and then let's do another scene. Whereas when it's actually contributing something, like the one everybody remembers, which is Anna Kendrick doing Cups in the first one, because that's kind of the first time you get to see what that character can do, like it's her coming out of her shell a little bit. Or in the same installment, there's a mashup with Bulletproof by LaRue, which is memorable partly because it's like it introduces some conflict between the characters because it's something that she shouldn't necessarily have been doing on stage. So I can't really now recall really many of the other numbers from three. I don't know whether that's different for you, Ellie.
No, it's the same for me. They
some of the choreography and costumes, maybe.
Yes. Yeah, I can't remember what songs they did. It's very good.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it's not tied to narrative, it's a bit like,
yeah.
You enjoy it for when it's happening, and then you're like, eh, it's gone from my brain now.
Yeah.
I also feel like, I didn't like the second installment as much as the first one, partly because I think there were some easy, even lazy gags in there about some of the members of the cast.
Definitely.
A bit less of that this time, although the Latina member of the ensemble still gets all the jokes about her being an illegal immigrant.
Yeah.
But some of the other ones, they're avoiding the lazy gags and going for something that's a bit more interesting and unexpected and therefore more funny. Like, it lands better because you're not expecting it.
And at least the Latina role gets a little bit of comeuppance with when she reveals what she's currently doing with her life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all the illegal immigrant remarks suddenly become completely...
It kind of shows all the other characters up.
Yeah,
And Hayley Steinfeld, who was a new addition for Pitch Perfect 2, feels a bit more like a member of the ensemble now. And definitely, like, they've given her kind of a role as a comic foil for Rebel Wilson.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, nice. Okay.
Which works really well.
Just really good.
She's really funny, actually. Yeah. I think because she's a pretty girl, I think you get, like... She's been in a lot of like romantic leads, and actually, she's just really good at being super awkward.
Yeah,
yeah.
She's really good at being super awkward in the second one.
If you haven't seen her in True Grit,
she's so good in True Grit.
Really excellent performance.
She's such a good actress, and I just don't want to see her in any more like stupid romantic films. I just want to see her being funny or being gritty or nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I recommend. I would definitely rank the films 1, 3, 2.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I definitely need to see it then.
Yeah. And the nothingy soldier that you mentioned is played by Matt Lanter, who is a personal favourite of mine.
Okay.
He's in a series called Timeless.
Right.
Which is about time travel. Sure. So like some current, I can't remember if it's like CIA or FBI, but some agency have been working with some people to make a time machine, and and they send an agent, a scientist and a historian back in time to try and fix some stuff.
Oh, I know that guy.
So it's kind of like, kind of Quantum Leap-y, I guess. And I really, really enjoy that. And it got cancelled, and then the fans did an outcry, and it's got a season two coming, and I'm super excited.
Great.
It's got Abigail Spencer in the lead, who's the beautiful lady who's in lots of things. She's in Grey's Anatomy currently. But yeah, so
we've
I love him.
Into Ellie's TV recommendations.
Yeah, mm-hmm, recommend Timeless. Timeless. Season one is available now on UK Netflix, so you should watch that. But that's why I... Since he came on screen and Pitch Perfect 3, I was just like, years. Years.
He is a very handsome man.
He's very handsome.
He is. I can see him as a soldier. I mean, that's really the role he was born to play.
Yeah. That's very good. So, good. Well, and the guy that I referred to as Craig from Hollyoaks does have a name.
Oh, yeah.
Guy Burnett.
Okay.
He's done well to go from Hollyoaks to Hollywood.
Yeah.
So, well done, Guy.
He's been in some. He's been in a bunch of American TV shows as well.
Yes.
So he is.
And this is obviously a bit of a step up, I guess, from TV shows.
Gets to keep his British accent in it.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah. Oh, no, I saw him being a weird American in recent TV series.
He is less weird being British.
Yeah, that's good.
And he's got a very good beard going on. So
that's what's
going
to be next for the review. Do we know what Matt's going to do next?
I do not know yet.
Ooh.
This is often the response.
And even when it's not, I don't usually see the thing I say I'm going to see.
Yeah, that's true.
Matt is a liar.
Or just changes his mind, that's fine. It's fine for you to change your mind about stuff, you know.
There's quite a lot of the Oscar potential stuff coming out at the moment, so it may well be one of those, I guess.
Potentially.
Yeah, there's quite a few out there.
Just because they're flooding the cinemas. Mm. But who knows, there's lots of different things coming out.
Yep.
So I look forward to knowing what it is. And as usual, if anyone's got something
stay
they
tuned.
Really want Matt to review, you can always get in touch on the internet. You can tweet Matt directly at Matt Boothman, or you can get in touch with us at Blackshore Update on the Twitter or various other means, which we will tell you about in the show. So we're going to check in now with a little bit of art in the form of limericks.
Strad and Alex do art.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, art. Oh. Oh, I mean, it looks lovely, mate.
Okay, Alex and Strat, how are you feeling about today's challenge?
Pretty good.
I'm feeling like a man from West London.
Excellent, good. Okay, well, on that basis, we'll proceed. Today, we are going to get you to write some limericks.
Yeah.
Which are, I mean, my school kind of level of knowledge of them is that they're always rude.
Yeah, usually.
Generally, the best ones are, in my opinion.
There was a girl from Nantucket.
Who lived in a bucket. See?
Yeah, that's,
see what I did there?
Yeah, I mean, that's not quite right, but sure.
I mean, I know Strat is a big aficionado of a certain limerick writer who isn't usually rude.
No, Edward Lear is not rude at all. Usually and does just a thing that annoys a lot of people around this table, where he ends with the same word as he begins with, which I know a lot of people don't like in limerick. So I'm going to have to not do that if I want to win.
Well, it's okay, because I think the main person who didn't like it was me, and I'm up against you, so I don't have a deciding vote.
That's true.
So you're safe in that regard.
How much is art about knowing your audience?
That's true.
How much is it about just doing what makes you happy?
Yeah.
These and more.
No, I want to win.
Art about winning.
I mean, in this context, I guess it can be, but in normal life, it's not always about winning. I'm going to let you know what Wikipedia has to say about a limerick.
Brilliant.
A limerick is a form of verse, often humorous and sometimes obscene.
Mm.
In five line, predominantly anapestic. I'm going to say anapestic. Meter. With a strict rhyme scheme of AABBA. In which the first, second, and fifth line rhyme, while the third and fourth lines are shorter and share a different rhyme. So the following example, I'm guessing this probably isn't going to be too rude, is a limerick of unknown origin. The limerick packs laughs anatomical into space that is quite economical. But the good ones I've seen so seldom are clean, and the clean ones so seldom are comical. That's pretty good.
It's a meta limerick.
That's good.
About limericks.
It was popularised by Edward Lear.
Said what he wrote, I think over 100.
There you go.
A book full of them.
So that's your challenge, and your challenge is in fact to write three limericks,
right?
And they have to be in some way loosely related to the Blackshaw Arts Hour.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just so thinking of all the words that rhyme with art.
Well.
I know the one you're thinking of.
Such children. Fart.
Hey, you said it, not me. I mean, I was
spoiled
thinking of
each of my limericks
there. It's going to end up being like Baldrick in Blackadder, when he writes his poetry about war. War's a horrid thing. Ding-a-ling-a-ling.
Bang, bang.
Boom, 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 boom. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, very good. So, you have 20 minutes to produce these three limericks.
Right.
Because we're sort of assuming they'll be... Well, I mean, we know they're going to be short. We know the form they're going to take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we want to get something fresh out of your brain. Don't overthink it.
Okay.
Have you got any questions?
No.
Okay. Matt, any words of advice?
Say them out loud to yourself to make sure that you've got the meter right.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is a very good shout.
That's actually really good advice.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say something really stupid or rude. You let me know.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'll leave the stupid and rude to these two.
Yeah, that's probably better.
Who's Water. Stupid, who's rude?
Remains to be seen.
Great. Get going.
Cool.
Okay.
Where can you find Blackshaw? Is it on Twitter?
Yay!
That's right. It's at Blackshaw Update. Is it on Instagram?
Yay!
That's right. It's at Blackshaw Theatre. Is it on Facebook?
Yes!
That's right. It's at Blackshaw Online. And don't forget, you can also find Blackshaw at...
BlackshawOnline.com! Yay!
Well, we'll see how they get on with that exciting task. And we're going to, in the meantime, be talking about that article I mentioned earlier from Time Out, which lists 18 shows in 2018. Now, this is specifically theatre shows, and I'm going to see at least one of them, so I'm quite pleased about that.
Yeah, 1 out of 18 is not bad, actually.
Yeah, you're ahead of the game.
Before we even looked at that.
And it's listed as number one, so does that mean it's the best? I don't think that would
just
be like that.
Or just soonest. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how Time Out decided to order this, but they say, want to know what theatre tickets to buy in 2018? That does sound like the kind of thing we would want to know.
Yeah.
Shortcut it straight to the very best shows coming to London with our selection of musicals, immersive plays and off West End shows that you'd be mad to miss in 2018.
So there we go. Mad to miss. I mean, I don't know that many people will see all 18 because time and money.
Yeah. And sometimes just ability to get the tickets.
Yes. Also true. But we're going to go through them and we're going to have tiny to potentially long chats about them, depending on our feelings of each.
And level of knowledge about each show. Yeah.
So first on the list, as I say, is one that I think all three of us are currently booked to see. Is that correct?
Nope.
No,
you're
not
coming.
Even.
I'm not, I'm afraid.
Oh,
just the two of you.
Boo.
This is The Birthday Party, which is a Harold Pinter classic. And it's its 60th anniversary revival.
That is shocking.
I feel, that makes me feel old. I mean, obviously
I mean,
around 60
we're not
years
60.
Ago, but
still makes me feel old.
And it's got some big hitter names in there. It's got Toby Jones, Stephen Mangan, Zoe Wanamaker and Pearl Mackey.
Yeah, it's massive.
That's pretty huge.
It's huge. I love Stephen Mangan so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's my fave. I love him. I feel like he's going to be good on stage.
Good. He's wearing a jazzy shirt in the promo shot.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't expect anything less. It seems to match the wallpaper behind him as well, which you can only imagine is the right thing to do in Harold Pinter landmark drama.
So it's obviously playing at the Harold Pinter Theatre.
Classic.
And it's running from the 9th of January, so it's already started as you're listening now. And it runs until the 14th of April. So there is, in theory, time
very
to
much
go,
time to get tickets. Yeah.
But who knows what the ticket sales will be like at this stage.
Tell me if this is a weird thing to think, but I feel like Toby Jones has the exact kind of face I expect to see in a Harold Pinter play.
Yes, yeah. Yes, he does. And even more so in this promo shot, I would say, where
he is frowning.
Yeah.
And he's got some horn-rimmed glasses on, so they have really...
We'll be including a link to this article in all our post-show stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he it's because he looks quintessentially English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in like a slightly like...
And a little bit down.
Yes,
yeah.
a bit glum,
yeah,
and like very, like he's got quite a craggy face
and a big forehead.
Yeah,
I think these are important.
They're all Pinter points of interest.
Yeah, so true. I think it is quite important actually that people in Harold Pinter plays do look like a little bit unusual.
Yeah,
like I don't think
it's
I don't,
definitely all character roles.
Yeah,
isn't
I
it?
Don't want conventionally beautiful people swanning about in Harold Pinter plays. Quite frankly,
no. They all need to look really distinct as well. You don't want, to use a Matt Boothman term, vanilla casting.
No vanilla casting. I'm really looking forward to it. I think that's going to be, it's going to be great.
And knowing the play, what do you guys think? What feelings might we have to experience as audience members?
I don't know the play that very
well. Oh, you don't know the play?
No.
Well, I think it will be classic Harold Pinter. Stuff.
I think it's going to be a lot of cringing.
Yeah, maybe. And lots of heavy drama.
Yeah.
There'll be some intense stuff. And there'll be a lot of, I can only imagine, awkward pauses. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Quite a contrast at number two, Julius Caesar playing at the Bridge Theatre, which is a pretty new venue.
Yeah, so this is not experiencing its 60th anniversary revival.
No.
More like its 600th.
And it's playing from the 20th of January to the 15th of April. Again, big names.
Well, I think this is the reason this one is exciting, because I'm kind of sick of seeing Julius Caesar interpretations on the stage.
I'm really not big into history plays.
Yeah.
Oh, Julius Caesar is
when was the last
like...
time somebody did Julius Caesar and didn't update it to like a modern role?
Oh, never. I think even Shakespeare did that. Even Shakespeare was like, don't set this in Roman times. That would be stupid. Let's set this in... Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, it's a very famous story. Yeah. So everyone.
Spoiler:
knows,
he dies.
Spoiler: Julius Caesar gets stabbed, and then
et tu, Brute,
and then says et tu, Brute. But in this situation, Brutus is played by the quite incredible Ben Whishaw. Yes. So if that's not that's a reason to see this play.
He is sporting quite the tash in the promo shots.
So solid. And not only is Ben Whishaw in it, but we've also got David Morrissey, David Calder, and Michelle Fairley.
Yeah.
So that is an incredible cast.
Yeah.
So I would, if
and
you're...
And it's directed by Nicholas
Heitner. Ex of The National, now of The Bridge.
Yeah, and he literally went, oh, I'm not working on The National anymore. I'm going to build me my own theatre.
He is the kind of guy that can do that. Yeah. And I just think, like, this is... Like, if you are the kind of person like me that's like, oh, another Julius Caesar interpretation, okay, fine. The cast is the reason to go and see this.
Yeah,
and potentially a visit to The Bridge as a new theatre is the reason to go.
Yeah, and it's set up.
This.
This performance is going to be Promenade.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah.
I've not seen that.
Which for non-theatre term people means walk aroundy.
Yes, walk aroundy. Yeah.
Which I... Because we've been talking about The Bridge. I think we've talked about it on the show before as a new venue.
Yeah.
And one of its strengths as a venue is its like the spaces that are not the theatre. Like the theatre bit itself is like the space is good and it's nice and it's well put together as you would expect from a purpose built theatre space.
Yeah.
But the bit that everybody talks about is the foyer,
where
everybody can mingle and buy baked goods in the interval.
Ooh, baked goods.
So I would assume, if it's Promenade, that it's going to come out into the rest of the spaces and really use the building.
I wonder if they've got any interesting bits in other places of the building that they don't use or haven't been fully converted.
Well, you can only think that, like, if it's going to be a Promenade production, it's got to come out of the theatre space itself. But actually, like, thinking about Julius Caesar as a play, there's quite a lot of opportunities for, like, speaking to the crowd. Like, there's some oration.
Right.
I can only assume that the audience are perhaps going to form, like, the people of
Rome.
So they almost play a part in
also, Promenade
production.
Can mean a lot of different things.
Well,
it might not mean that you move around very much at all. Or it might mean that you spend the whole thing walking around.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be it runs the gamut.
It does. Yeah. So it'd be interesting to know how that's staged.
Also, potentially a... I'm not sure how the timeline works out, but potentially a warm-up or potentially the other way around for David Morrissey in being a Roman.
Yes.
Because he is in a new series called Titania.
Sky, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Where he is a Roman. Is he playing Caesar in that? He's playing a Roman invading England.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I assume he's...
Potentially...
Or maybe like Hadrian or something.
Yeah, or Tacitus.
Yeah, okay. That's more my Roman knowledge exhausted. But yeah, I think the thing I like about... Shakespeare modernizations of Shakespeare plays or modernizations of plays is that like 9 times out of 10 they just don't quite work, right? Like there's always something where you're just like, oh, this was a square peg round hole situation.
9 times out of 10 it's just set dressing.
Yeah,
it's just we've put people in different costumes
and we're hoping that you'll kind of reach some kind of conclusion as an audience as to why this makes
sense. Relevant it is to the current day.
But the 1 time in 10 where you see it and they've really made it work, it is brilliant. Like, if somebody can make it relevant, and I feel like of all the people that could potentially do that, Nicholas Heitner is the kind of guy that can do that.
Yeah.
If he hasn't, I will be disappointed, and I might write him a letter.
Well, look out, Nicholas, for that.
Final thing on this is, it'll be good to see Ben Whishaw being allowed to show his tough side again.
Yes.
Because he often gets quite vulnerable.
He does,
very vulnerable roles.
But you both saw him in Mojo as well,
I saw
right?
him in Mojo,
Vicky saw him in Mojo.
Yeah. So
Jess
good.
Butterworth's Mojo, playing a really tough gangster. Well, like an actually quite
unhinged.
Unstable
yeah,
gangster.
Yeah, completely unhinged,
role.
Yeah.
So it's nice. We know he has that range, and it's nice that more people will get to see that side of his range.
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it'll be really good. All right, then, next on the list.
Number 3, Girls and Boys. This is the Royal Court, and this is a big one, possibly purely due to the fact that Carey Mulligan is playing.
I would say not purely because of that, but also we've got Dennis Kelly writing, who
off of
Matilda, and off of the very like underlauded TV show Utopia.
Did not hear of watch. No.
Yeah, it wasn't very well promoted. It was on did 2 series on Channel 4. It was very very good.
Yeah,
very. Weird and brutal. And
you're going to see this, Matt. You're seeing this.
I haven't booked yet, but I'm going to try and see this.
Okay.
Yes.
Matt is trying to see this.
He's trying real hard.
Yeah. I've no idea what it's about. Of those on the strength of the creative team things.
Yeah. And I think that's a fair. I mean, this is the Royal Court as well. Like, you can't go. I don't think you can go far wrong
You're, I think, at the Royal Court, you're kind of, you might not love what you see, but you will be interested and your thoughts will be provoked.
Yeah, you've not wasted your money. I think that's the key thing. Yeah, you might not, like, come out having loved it, but... and it says here, yeah, winter season is notably low-key and international, with the exception of this. Mm. So, yeah, this will probably be the standout. Although what usually happens at the Royal Court, I find, is they have something that seems like it's going to be the standout, and then the thing something that everyone's raving about is the low-key international thing that nobody saw coming.
So that's running the 8th of February to the 17th of March.
Quick shout-out to the Royal Court Theatre Playwrights podcast, which is well worth subscribing to if you're interested in theatre and how stories are put together on the stage. Simon Stevens interviews...
He's brilliant.
All the playwrights working at the Royal Court.
Great. That's some good stuff.
So, number four is Jubilee. And this is at the Lyric Hammersmith. This intriguingly audacious project from the experimental Chris Good Company is a stage adaptation of Derek Jarman's surreal 1978 punk film, in which Elizabeth I journeys forward to the time of Elizabeth II's Silver Jubilee and hooks up with a rampaging gang of murderous girls.
Yep.
Toya Wilcox, who is in the film, stars as the monarch. My mind is blown by this. Yeah. What happened? Did I just take some drugs?
I read this like 7 times, and I've heard you read it out loud now, and I'm still not quite sure what's happening. I haven't seen the surreal 1978 punk film Jubilee, but kind of now feel like I need to see it.
Also, Toya Wilcox, she's like the children's TV presenter, right? Am I misremembering?
Well, I think she was she's Australian. She was like an artist, but then I think she was in some kids' TV stuff when we were young.
Yeah, it's totally her. I've just Google imaged her.
Yeah, but she was
has
an
a
Australian,
bit of a lisp.
Yeah, Australian pop star.
She's no, she's English.
No, she's Australian, isn't she?
No.
Have I just made that up?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought she was Australian.
No.
There we go. Maybe she is an Australian in something that I've seen. That must be.
That sounds believable.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's English. No. I saw her in Panto once.
Oh, well, there you go. That can only be a good sign for this production.
Yeah.
I mean, from this production shot that we have here, the costumes look... Well, they've used the word audacious in the opening line of this description, so I think that's an indication.
Well done, Toya.
It's at the Lyric, so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Yeah. I feel like it's going to be some left field stuff. Experimental Chris Good Company. Have we seen anything by them?
Not I you. Think, and up. I'm going to have to look this up after the show and see whether I've remembered this right. I'm pretty sure I've seen a Chris Good adaptation of Three Sisters at the Gate.
Okay.
That sounds believable.
Many, many years ago, which was part improvised and turned out differently every performance.
Oh.
They had a lot of stuff around the stage that they could interact with, and they didn't necessarily have to do it the same way every performance. So,
right.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. I enjoyed it. It
does sound interesting. Okay, great. Well, that was Jubilee.
Yeah.
Number five, Frozen, not the Disney musical.
Thankfully.
Now, I did actually hear Saran Jones, who's starring in this, talk about this on The Graham Norton Show. It's a classic drama by Brian Lee Lavery about a mother whose child goes missing.
Uplifting.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Saran Jones said, shortly after becoming a mother, she suddenly felt like she wanted to do all of these super dark dramas.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's been doing a lot. Like, this feels
like Dr. Foster, for example.
Yeah, that this is type for her, right? Yes. To do something. Yeah. Like, as soon as I saw this, I was like, I'm seeing Saran Jones' face looking super sad, which she is very good at.
Yeah.
And then I'm seeing a description about a play about a mother whose child goes missing, and I'm going, sure.
Makes sense.
It does.
She has promised Graham Norton, at least, that she's going to move away from this
the dark and twisty,
very specifically dark subject matter. But I mean, I'm intrigued. I love that kind of genre of stuff. And I think she's brilliant. It's on at the Haymarket Theatre Royal.
Yeah. And so that's a West End theatre.
It is.
Yeah.
And
this isn't
a transfer or anything, is it?
It just seems to be a revival.
Yeah. Which is good, because it's suggesting that Bryony Lavery, who's not been, like, she's not been around that long in terms of, like on the scale of the British theatrical canon, she is a newcomer.
Yes.
But, it seems like maybe she's got into the canon now.
Yeah.
Like, you can do a West End production of one of her plays without it having to go off West End first.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to know like how this came about. Like as a like if someone was like, you know what, we should get Suran Jones on the stage. You know, what would be a good play. Is Frozen by Bryony Levery to do? You know, because we know that Suran Jones has the dramatic capability, and we know that she's interested in these kinds of parts. Like that could be
maybe.
I'm sure that will be. You know, that will totally be worth the money on the strength of her being a great performer.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to go and see that. It's running from the 9th of February to the 5th of May. So that's a good chunk of time to go and see. Next one, number 6, is Macbeth.
More Shakespeare.
More Shakespeare.
2 out of 18.
This is over at the Nash. So Rufus Norris...
He's the new...
Is the new...
the new dude.
New dude.
Artistic director.
AD, yep. He's directing, and it's starring Rory Kinnear and Anne-Marie Duff.
I mean, that is strong, isn't it?
Both national darlings. I've seen them both perform at the National. Yeah. They're kind of semi-regulars on the stages there.
I'm sure Anne-Marie Duff's played Lady Macbeth before.
I don't know, but I mean...
I'm looking into it.
She's incredible.
Every day.
Basically, as long as you're happy to go and see a super intense play,
this
will pretty much guaranteed be great. I find Macbeth very intense.
The thing with most Shakespeare plays, like when there's a revival of a Shakespeare text, the thing that weighs most heavily on my decision is how long is it since I last saw a production of that.
That right. seems like a fair That's way why of thinking I can't, through.
I'm not seeing Hamlets at the moment because I saw too many in quick succession.
Yeah, we went through a real like Hamlet phase.
Big old Hamlet.
Yeah.
Also, I thought you were going to say the thing you think about is how long is it?
Oh, that's also
because
a consideration.
That, for me, genuinely, I'm like, look, if they're doing the full text, no.
The good thing
I don't have 5 hours to spend on this.
The good thing about Macbeth is that it is one of the shorter plays.
And it's very cuttable as well. It's one of those.
There's a lot of long speeches.
Are they going to do the gatekeeper, the guardsman? He's the speech that normally goes first.
Oh yeah, that goes. That always goes. I mean, why did Shakespeare even put it in? This is a question that...
Isn't that the funny bit though?
It is.
He's the jester.
He speaks in prose, which is how you know he's common.
Yeah.
Yes.
And talks about his bits quite a lot.
Yeah. I mean, Shakespeare classic. I'm sure it'll be great. It doesn't say here whether it's a modernisation or no.
Yeah, and you can't tell from the picture.
No, you really can't tell from the picture. And I wonder if that is because they're intentionally... Mm.
Or they haven't decided yet.
Yeah, maybe. Let's just pop them in khaki pants and a shirt and
just wear all black and then...
The PR copy does specify Scottish, though, so I suspect that means they're going to be doing their Scottish accents.
I love it.
That would be good.
I think that would make it better.
And actually, I don't think I've actually seen a Macbeth where they're allowed to be Scottish.
It's a surprisingly rare occurrence,
which is
I think.
Weird, just because that just makes sense, doesn't it?
I think for me, like, the thing that I want from Macbeth as a Shakespeare play is maximum blood and gore. That's what I'm... Like, I want maximum gross witches, maximum blood
and gore. I was going to say, a big test for me on whether a production of Macbeth is good or not is the witches.
I got
really angry one time when I saw it, and they made the witches, like, a chorus.
Boring.
I was like, no, it's not how... No, just no.
I got in trouble for reviewing a production of Macbeth once. There's still a song... knocking around the internet about me written by one of the witches.
Because you didn't give them a positive review.
Because I said one of them couldn't sing and it turned out he was in a band.
I don't think that necessarily means they can sing.
Yeah. I'm going to make a prediction about this production based on the promo image alone, which is that they're going to be playing up the Macbeth Lady Macbeth relationship.
Yes.
Making a big thing of that. Yeah. Tempestuous romance.
And the intimacy.
It definitely seems that way. It'd be hilarious if it turns out that Rory Kinnear and Anne-Marie Duff aren't playing.
Having a real nice cuddle with one of the witches.
It's very unlikely that that's not the case, but I just feel like that would be hilarious.
So that is running at the National Theatre from the 26th of February to the 12th of May. And we're going to pause that conversation there to be continued in the next show. But for now, it's time to check back in with the lads and see how they got on with their limericks.
Strad and Alex do art.
Oh, yeah.
So, returning from your steamy limerick writing session. I say steamy just because we sent you upstairs to do it where it was quieter.
Into the sauna.
It was not humidity levels were like maybe 30%.
Oh, right. That's quite dry.
I know. Well, it is dry in my flat.
Okay, good.
That's how I like it.
Good to know. So let's, should we just dive straight in and hear them?
Yeah. Should we alternate one from Strat, one from Alex? Or do we want all three?
I think for judging purposes, we'll need to hear all three together. Otherwise, I'll get confused as to who wrote what.
All right.
So who wants to go first?
Do you want to go first?
I'll go first. Okay. I've written five. I know we should have written three, but so I'm now in a process of trying to choose which ones I want to do rather than being like, I'm going to read five and you get to pick one.
Well, do you want to read all five, but tell us which you're... Tell you what, read the three that you're submitting and then we'll have a little bonus two at the end.
Yeah, that's... Okay. Okay, I'll start with this one. Two jokers attempting to art. It's hard to tell them apart. Laughing and playing, don't know what they're saying. I'm just glad I've not used the word fart.
Very nice.
The Matt Boothman film review. Fancy a listen? Pull up a pew. This man knows words in a way that's absurd. So much it's hard to eschew.
Is that the word you looked up?
Yeah.
I think I was stunned into silence on the basis that you'd used a word I've never heard come out of your mouth before. Very good, very good.
Art helps you improve yourself.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go with this one. Working alongside a cat can be hard. There's fairness in that. This fluffy ball of fur does more than just purr. She also eats loudly, the twat.
Lovely.
Good thing we're on post-watershed now.
Yeah, and that is accurate. Stratton.
Right, first one. While listening to the show yesterday, they reviewed 50 Shades of Grey. Matt didn't find it a thriller. He found it rather vanilla, which I didn't expect him to say.
Yes.
We thought we'd do something real smart. A highbrow, intelligent part. We wanted a section that was utter perfection, but we got Strat and Alex do art.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, good.
When Matt's recording sat on his tushy, there's something you can't, but he can see. If you hear him mutter or stumble or stutter, he's distracted by Ellie's pussy.
Wikipedia did say they were often absurd.
Yes.
I did two that weren't. And I'm glad, Alex, you did one about Ellie's cat.
To give context.
To give context before I hit that one.
She doesn't look impressed right now.
She doesn't.
We're in a situation now which I often find myself in when I play the card game Cards Against Humanity, where I have a dilemma about, like, do I want to encourage this behaviour by giving this person a win?
Yes, yeah.
You said they were obscene!
Yeah, I mean...
Shall we have a palate cleanser of the other two that I wrote?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Just as a...
Give us some thinking / recovery time.
Yeah. This is one that I was thinking up before, so I didn't include it, but I wanted to write it anyway. I'm not an old man from Kent. My nose isn't terribly bent. These stereotypes are silly and shite and not at all what is meant.
But you are from Kent and your nose is a bit bent.
But I'm not an old man from Kent.
Is it about Nick Tatchell?
No, it's just because a lot of like limericks will. There was an old man from Kent.
Yes, yeah.
So what I've done is I've used the historical limerick tradition there.
Good job.
This one I just think is a bit rubbish, which is why I didn't add it in. Tentatively approaching a task, trying not to get caught up too fast, being tactful and deft, wanting emotional heft, but knowing it's already been done in the past.
Oh, that's a bit emo, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's what I was a bit like,
self-reflective.
I know.
I didn't know that limericks could be emo, but they totally can.
You've created a new subgenre of limerick.
Yeah, emo limericks.
Limo Rick.
Yeah. Oh!
Yes. Well, Matt, what are your immediate thoughts?
Strat.
Yeah. I mean, wow.
I'm so sorry.
The first two were just genuinely brilliant.
Yeah.
And then the third one, I mean, I was shocked.
Ticked the final box on the brief.
Yes, it did.
As it were.
Yes, our briefs were thoroughly ticked.
Yes.
Good.
Congratulations.
Well
thank
done.
You very much.
Awesome. Why don't you at home, listeners, try writing a limerick and feel free to send it in.
Yeah, you can easily tweet a limerick these days.
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah, 280 characters is...
Yeah, totally doable. 20.
Yeah.
Yes, send it to us at Blackshore Update and we will retweet the best.
Yeah, maybe even read some out on a future show.
Who knows?
Oof. It's a good idea.
Go on, treat yourself to something.
Subscribe to the Blackshore Arts Hour on your generic podcast resource.
You deserve it.
So, Vicky, how do you feel after hearing the limericks?
I mean, shocked and a little bit appalled, but also quite impressed, I think. It was the overall feeling that I have.
I actually feel like if the explicit one had come from Alex, I would not have felt the same as I do about it coming
totally
from Strat.
That's totally true.
What, less surprised?
Yeah, I would have been less surprised if it had come from Alex, but coming from Strat. And delivered in a slightly sheepish manner.
Made it all the more awkward.
It did. But I remember it was about my cat.
It was about Ellie's cat. If anything, Strat isn't the one being obscene, it's everyone else.
It's the hearer of the...
But I have only recently just stopped laughing about it. So yeah. I'm glad that we had a little pause while I caught my breath.
Yep. Good times. So... moving on from dirty rhymes, we are going to briefly talk about WAF. So as I said, that's not just a noise, it is also the Wandsworth Arts Fringe. It's back in 2018 and there is still time to take part.
Ooh. Yes.
That is exciting. So if you want to just go and watch stuff, it's running from the 4th to the 20th of May and there'll be lots of information coming out about it over the coming weeks. But if you want to take part, you can. The closing date for registration is the 2nd of February. So you do have a week or so to just hop on that. And it's all kinds of art performance is what they're looking for. So we're taking part with a radio play, The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell. And that will be happening during the festival. But if you have anything else that could it could be... a movement piece, it could be art like off of traditional painting art, if you've got an exhibition, it could be some kind of songy dancey thing.
Do some stand-up, can you do that?
Yes, yeah. Comedy, absolutely.
All of these things are acceptable.
With the deadline approaching, probably like simple one-person things are going to be the things that you'll be able to do.
Yeah, unless you have a show that you want to transfer. So it's becoming a really good place to transfer things both from and to. It's a really good kind of test bed for any new material that you're putting together, particularly if you're going up to Edinburgh Fringe, I would guess.
A couple of things to mention. You don't have to be from Wandsworth if you are a podcast listener or you're listening online and you're not based in Wandsworth. That doesn't mean you can't take part in the Fringe.
In fact, we welcome people
very welcome people from outside of the borough. If you're thinking, well, I've got a great idea for a thing I would do, but I have no idea where I would do it, then help is available on the Wandsworth Fringe Facebook group, I think.
And the website, which is wandsworthfringe.com.
Where you can find out more about some of the venues that are involved in the festival. So don't let that hold you back if you have an idea for something that you'd like to
do. There's a whole venue section on the website where you can see places that have expressed interest in hosting an activity. So there's lots of possibilities to still get involved. And as I say, the registration deadline is the 2nd of February. So just go to wandsworthfringe.com to get involved. Good.
Exciting.
It's very exciting.
So I think that's probably all we have to say about our involvement in the Fringe at the moment, but we will be making exciting announcements in future shows, so keep a lookout for that. The last thing we're going to be touching base.
We're not a multinational.
No.
Yeah.
We're not touching base, we're just touching. We're touching Merely Role Players, our sister podcast.
Mostly by touching ourselves. Oh, that's weird.
No. Yeah,
that's weird as well.
Too far.
Oh god. No. Back it up.
Merely Role Players. So we've talked about it before. It is an excellent podcast. It is a theatre form all of its own. And the second season is now just over halfway through episode three.
If you're the sort of person who listens as soon as the Black Shore Arts Hour lands in your feed, or if you're even listening live at midnight on Wandsworth Radio,
the witching hour,
then the third episode of the current 5-episode season dropped just yesterday.
Hot.
It's not too late to listen to it all. You could binge that thing so hard.
Oh man, you can go all the way back to the beginning of season one. I'm kind of jealous of people who can do that. Yeah. I've already heard it all, but it's
and lived it all. I mean,
lived through it.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of it. Season one is there, and season two is, as we just started halfway through, and it is exciting. Season two is like we stepped up our game.
I think
it's a mystery adventure. There may or may not be such Famous Five-esque stuff as remote coastal locations, secret passages, smugglers,
yes,
kidnappings,
general hijinks,
mild peril,
useless police that turn up at the end, maybe. Yeah.
The actual mildest of peril like tends to be the norm for Famous Five.
And hey, it gets pretty dodge.
Yeah, there's some scary, there's some hairy, scary bits in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't say hairy, scary bits.
There are hairy, scary bits in caves.
I said, don't say it. So yeah.
And we're getting ahead in that this coming weekend, we are going to record the next season.
Yeah.
So we've done a ghost story. We've done a Blighton-esque adventure mystery. And we are then going to do a hard-boiled... Wild Western.
Oh, I'm so excited.
This is the one I've been waiting for.
Is it because your name is Vicky Western?
Yes, correct. And my Twitter handle is @SpaghettiWestern.
Yeah.
This is what I'm here for. This. I'm very excited. I am going to wear a hat.
Oh, I was just thinking that.
And poncho.
Spurs? Yeah.
Definitely.
For kicking Alex under the table and annoying.
Yes, that is the primary function of a spur.
So we are going to end the show with a little trail for mini role players, which you can find in all locations you can get good podcasts, so you guys know what you're doing. So it's bye for now. We'll be back next time and look forward to touching you all through your ears then. And you'll be able to hear the second part of our 18 shows to see in 2018. So if that's not a good reason, I don't know other ones.
There are other ones
because we haven't planned the rest of the show yet.
Yeah, that's correct.
So thanks very much. Bye.
Bye.
I believe that role-playing games are art. Specifically, role-playing games are theatre, which means theatre artists are natural role players.
What sort of hat am I wearing?
It's the important details.
Is it like a tricorn hat?
Yeah,
he has
sure.
got into full theatre mode now. Right, this is amazing.
So they want to be entertained. I'm going to give them a shot with my iron and my tricorn hat.
Life's a game. The world's our stage, and we're merely role players. Merely Role Players, a podcast where dramatic people play role playing games. Hosted by me, MJ Starling, in association with Blackshaw Theatre Company. Find us at merelyroleplayers.podbean.com or search your usual podcast app for Merely Role Players.